The scene is a laboratory, and the scientist is confused. The brain he had put into his creation wasn't behaving properly. He had sent Igor to retrieve one of the best brains available. And what had gone wrong? The following conversation ensues. "That brain that you gave me, whose brain was it? Was it Hans Delbruck's? No. Would you mind telling me whose brain I did put in? And you won't be angry." "I will not be angry." "Abby someone." "Abby who?" "Abby normal." "Abby normal?" I'm almost sure that was his name. For those of you who didn't get the reference, the previous conversation was an excerpt from the movie Young Frankenstein, when Igor picked the wrong brain, the abnormal brain, for Dr. Frankenstein to use. My point today is not to recount other very hilarious bits from that movie, but simply to use that conversation to introduce the topic I'd like to review with you today. What is normal? Specifically, what is God's standard of normal, and why should we care? Simply put, our view of normal is whatever we grew up with, isn't it? What we're familiar with. In bringing up this topic, the hard part is trying to define what normal is in a more general setting. If you don't believe me, try it on your own. Go look for definitions of normal. And as you get into the psychology, it's all over the place. We'll read an excerpt to show you that here in a moment. Webster's New Dictionary defines normal in human behavior as conforming with or constituting an accepted standard, modern, or pattern, especially as it corresponds to the median or average of a large group or type. Doesn't really help much, does it? In other words, normal is what most people are doing. And that pretty well defines the world around us, but it doesn't really answer our question, does it? What standard do we use? Whose definition of normal? Now, one of the normal things I grew up with is peanut butter, mayonnaise, and lettuce sandwiches. For those of you unaware of it, that's depression food. That's what my folks grew up with. They ate that because in schools they had to get certain food groups. Food budgets, like everything else, was very, very tight. You get used to that. We used to always eat it with chili. Big bowl of chili and a peanut butter, mayonnaise, and lettuce sandwich. Don't knock it till you try it. In taking a look at this topic, as I said, you know, it's interesting that the discussions of normal and where they are. If you go to the web, you can find all sorts of things. I did. I was curious what various websites or blogs would have to say. And I found one very interesting article that I'd like to read an excerpt to you now. This is from Psychology Today magazine, November of last year, written by Peter Kramer. "What is normal?" is his title. "The question of normality creates strange paradoxes in the consulting room. Often it is relatively healthy people who feel defective. In psychotherapy, patients may perseverate over vague complaints, feeling off balance and out of sync. The worriers may believe that they have too much of, or often too little, ambition, desire, confidence, spontaneity, or sociability. Their keen social awareness, a strength, when tinctured with obsessionality, causes them to fuss over glitches in the self. For them, a sense of abnormality precedes any diagnosis and may persist even when none is proffered." In other words, they look at themselves and they see what should be different. And they say, "I'm not normal." And even if the psychologist says, "No, that's normal," they don't oftentimes believe them, because the problems they see are very real to themselves. In contrast, he continues, "seriously ill patients may have no such concern. Those who manifest frank paranoia will insist on their normality." You ever try helping someone? You know they've got a problem. They just can't see it. And the harder you persist, the more they claim there is no problem. In fact, he writes, "anyone would be vigilant in the face of plots directed at them. Anorexics and alcoholics may profess certainly that they're fine. The degree of denial is something of a marker for severity of disorder. In other words, he says, in the clinical setting, the proliferation of diagnosis has diverse effects, making some people feel more normal, some less so, and touching others not at all. There is no automatic link between a label and a sense of abnormality. So even the psychologists sort of throw up their hands. The labels of normal and abnormal, as we might use them, are addressed by God in Scripture. Not necessarily in those terms, but they are. Let's look first at 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 8. God talks about normal and abnormal in terms of behavior. What is acceptable behavior, and we'll touch on that more as we progress, and what is not. And again, the premise from a human perspective is that whatever we grow up with is what we consider normal, isn't it? In 1 Peter 1 and in verse 18, Peter writes this, sort of breaking into the thought here, because he's talking about how we should live before God, Christians, how we should live before God. And then he talks about the aspects of holiness in verse 16, conducting yourself in verse 17, verse 18 then, knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold, from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers. We were all redeemed from that aimless conduct, weren't we? Traditions of our fathers. Some of us grew up in Lutheran faith, or Baptist's faith, or Catholics, or none at all. And yet we still bring things forward with us, don't we? This aimless conduct that Peter is talking about is in part what we're talking about, God's standard of normal. What the world views as normal is not, by God's perspective, and what Peter here is addressing is not necessarily outward actions, but more importantly, the thoughts and the attitudes that we form in our minds that are the premise, if you will, of what we end up doing, what we end up saying, and what we end up acting out. There are many times when we would not call conduct abnormal, but from God's viewpoint of what he expects and knows to work, it's not the norm of the attitudes he wants to see. Look at the contentions in the country right now. You know, it's always interesting when someone does a poll on whatever it is they want to find out what the country is feeling about. Have you noticed recently how divided everything is? Now, most people think that's normal. But it's not. It's not even normal from our cultural standpoint going back 30, 40 years. We had divisions back in the 60s, but there was still a stability of certain things that were considered acceptable and not. And yet we see a world that's much different than it was 40 years ago, don't we? 50 years ago. In Proverbs chapter 4, the writer here talks about behavior. And he talks about behavior in the context of how it becomes acceptable to the one instigating or acting out the behavior. Proverbs 4 and in verse 19. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. And that's often the case, isn't it? We continue to do things and then we ask ourselves, why isn't that working? When we think in our minds, it should. So what do? We do it again. And we do it again. And that's the definition of insanity, isn't it? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And yet, how often not only do we do that, but those in the world around us? Where this loop, if you will, gets acted out. That we're acting in opposition, as it says here. We're in opposition. Wickedness is opposition to God. It ends up putting us in a place like we're in a dark room, but we don't know what makes us stumble. You get up in the middle of the night in a hotel room. You're not familiar with that room, are you? And if you have to move around the room, you're unsure of where things are. And sometimes you navigate correctly and sometimes you don't. You bang into something. We need to be aware that our lives are not like that. God has called us to understand a better, definition of normal, if you will, of what works. Isaiah chapter 5 is another illustration. As God worked with Israel, he repeatedly was trying to show them a different way of life. As I'm framing it today, he was trying to show them what the real normal is. And yet repeatedly they missed it. And oftentimes it's easy for us to point fingers and say, well, why didn't they get it? It's so simple. And yet it's not when you don't have God's Spirit. If it was, the rest of the world would be doing it. But one of the times that God calls Israel to task is again in Isaiah 5 and verse 20. Where again he's taking them to task, if you will. He's giving them a heads up that there is judgment coming because they're in opposition to him. Their normal is not acceptable. And in verse 20, Isaiah 5, he says, woe to those who call evil good and good evil. Is the world around us much like that today? Try taking a stand, and I'm not being serious here, at work when somebody brings up something that we know is in opposition to God's way of life. How far will that conversation get? I can almost guarantee you not very far. Woe to those, God says. And he continues on there. Who put darkness for light and light for darkness. Who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Everything's backwards. Everything's upside down. Everything's inside out. You and I are called to know better. I've mentioned this before in other sermons. For decades, we would tout that the divorce rate pretty much in the Western nations was about 50%. Half of the marriages would end in divorce. That's not a complete statistic. It is true. There's more to it than that. It's actually that first-time marriages have a success rate of about 70%. The more someone marries after a divorce, the less their chance of a successful marriage. In other words, those that have 3-4 marriages, they tend to only last a couple of years. They've not learned the lesson. Their normal is how they operate. They're not finding out what doesn't work. And so they continue in that pattern. The same can be shown with a lot of other things. Now, that divorce statistic that I mentioned is starting to go down. And that sounds like a good thing, doesn't it? But the reason it's going down is not because of the divorces necessarily, of it in and of themselves. It's that less people are getting married. They're living together. And so then when they separate, there's no divorce to file. And so it skews the statistics. And yet it's normal to the world, isn't it? In fact, if you don't live together before marriage, you're seen as abnormal. It's seen as just odd. God says this standard in verse 20, this is not normal. Calling evil good and good evil is not right. That's not the right outlook. And we see that within even the last decade or so. The primary source for news now in this country is no longer print. It's no longer magazines or newspapers. The number one source for news in this country now is TV. And it's not the traditional TV news shows, NBC, CBS, Evening News, whatever it happens to be. Rather, the news sources now are shows such as John Corbett and David Letterman and Comedy Central. Those that are polled, that's where they get their news. So it's news wrapped in an entertainment package. And you can make an argument, it's not even really news. And yet that's normal. That's where most people get their source of information. If we move back in Isaiah to chapter 30, God again uses this skewed viewpoint, normal versus abnormal, to make another point to Israel. Isaiah 30 and verse 10. He's talking about how rebellious the people are, and he says, breaking into the thought, who say to the seers, do not see. In other words, to those that understand, those that would have knowledge, those that are sharp enough to discern, The population is basically saying, no, no, we don't want to hear that. Don't see for us. And to the prophets, don't prophesy to us right things. That is, to the teachers. Now, you can't do that. I mean, talk to anybody that's in the school system. And they'll tell you, in almost every case, their hands are tied. They can't discipline. And if you can't discipline, you can't teach very well. Don't prophesy to us the right things, but rather speak to us smooth things. Prophesy to us deceits. Tell us what we want to hear, not what we need to do. And again, we see the impact of that all around us, don't we? We, in this country and even Western nations, we elect time after time after time politicians that make promises that we know they have no intention of fulfilling. And then we pretend shock when they live up to our expectation. That's normal, though, isn't it? One of the sayings that I hate the most is a saying I used to get all the time in my previous line of work. That's just the way it's done. Don't tell me that. I don't like that. That's a cop-out. Oftentimes, though, as I mentioned, we humans view abnormal as abnormal, whatever, excuse me, let me back up, we view as normal whatever it is we want. That's what Isaiah 30 here is talking about. They didn't want to see God's normal. They wanted their normal. They wanted their standard of what was acceptable, what they wanted to justify. And we can even see this. We don't even have to look recently. We can go back to, even to the 1960s when I was a boy, a time of great upheaval in this country, wasn't it? All the social norms being thrown off, concepts of proper use of sex, what marriage was to be or not be, the viewpoint of authority, respecting authority, any number of things in this country that were being turned upside down was essentially a rejection of normal. What had worked for decades and centuries and longer was being turned away, turned out. But even that's not a unique time period. Mankind has done that from the beginning, I'm convinced. When Christ had his difficulties in his ministry with the Pharisees, this was essentially the problem he was facing. They had their viewpoint of normal, didn't they? It didn't fit with what Christ was saying. He says, no, you've loaded burdens on the people. And they claim, you've come to undo the law. Again, if we look at what constitutes normal in the culture around us, it can be frightening. It should be to us. The extent of premarital and extramarital sexual relationships is not only sort of winked at, it's condoned and in many cases endorsed. Living together without being married, as I talked about, is very acceptable. We've come to the point even in our culture where same-sex marital unions are becoming accepted. To the point where in California now, the judge has struck down their proposition, constitutional amendment, saying that marriage is between a man and a woman. He struck that down. So whatever it was, 90-some thousand voters that voted for that essentially said, no, you're wrong. With one stroke of the pen, he undoes that. Even morals as recently as 20 years ago were seeing turned inside out. What does God consider normal? And why should we consider what he views as normal? John 10, verse 10. Christ had much to say about this because the viewpoint even of his day was wrong. The Pharisees, in their desire to, as they saw it, obey God so he would have no reason to punish them again with a captivity, they took to an extreme. Rather than analyze attitudes and actions, they looked at law. And they began to implement law after law after law, to the point where, even to this day, an Orthodox Jew considers himself righteous as they obey their law. In fact, the Talmud supersedes the Bible. The Talmud is the record of their oral traditions, what the rabbis have passed down through the centuries. And so if the two are in conflict, who do you go to? They default to the Talmud. In every case, I think we could see where that would be problematic. In John 10 and in verse 10, Christ gives us insight here, saying the thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. Now, what does that say to you? What it says to me is that if he's coming so we can have life, what we thought we had before was not life. Rather, it's what is preceded in this. It's a thief. In other words, what we think we have is actually stealing from us. And we can see that again in the world around us. People think that these things are okay, and then oftentimes by the time they realize it's not, there's too much damage done, isn't there? The drug abuser that's not only ruined their lives, but their health. And even if they can turn themselves around, they still deal with the consequences of that. That huge damage. What this also says to me is that there is, even as we understand it, God's way of life, there is something even better beyond that. I like the way Mr. Fahey put it at the feast last year in the Dells. This life we have is not real life. This is the training ground. This is so God can impress upon us what works and what doesn't work, so that we choose what does work. The Greek here is interesting because, as Christ says it, that they may have it more abundantly. The Greek indicates a superior abundance or an excess. I find that very interesting to contemplate. God, Christ, not only said, I want you to have life, but I want you to have it beyond all of your expectations. That it is such a full life, there's no thought for what is not there. What we think we might want. Rather, we have everything and more that we do need, and that will help us succeed in what God wants for us. This godly abundance in life, though, requires a different life than we have now. It requires a different normal. Romans chapter 13. Paul dealt with this topic in a variety of ways as he addressed the congregations that he set up and the areas that he went to. And one of the things that impressed the Roman culture with the Christian culture, if you will, is not only how different it was, but how much better it worked. And so Paul's instructions to husbands and wives are not just because this was something that he thought up, because it was more than broken in the Roman world. The outlook of children, the outlook of slaves, I mean, pick your topic, if you will, from the Roman culture, and oftentimes we can glamorize these things from 2,000 years down the road, but it really was not a good time. It was not a good culture. Paul then in Romans 13, verse 12, is addressing this in part where he says, the night is far spent, the day is at hand, let us cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. Now, how does this connect with what we're talking about here today? Remember the verse we talked about or read earlier where it talks about stumbling around in the darkness. Remember what I read earlier from the article in Psychology Today. The people that have the problems generally don't know they have the problems. That is, they're in darkness. You don't know what you can't see, right? Or can't figure out. If you're surrounded by that, as I said, if you grow up in that, that's what's expected, isn't it? You know, you grow up in a family of all boys, as I did. You have a certain outlook of life. Emergency rooms are just the way things work. By the time I was 16, I broke 5 different bones in my body, all different spots, various ways, just being a boy. You know, fires were not an uncommon occurrence. They were usually controlled, but sometimes they weren't. That's normal. You find out from other people things are not so normal, considering that viewpoint. And things that they'll do, and you'll look at them and sort of squint your eyes and say, well, that's just weird. When God calls us, he calls us to a different life, doesn't he? What Paul is talking about here in Romans 12 is that we are to look at things differently. And it requires a different light. It requires a bright light to be able to look, not only look at it and acknowledge it, but then to say, yes, I need to change that. If you've never had this conversation, one of the most interesting conversations you could ever have is if someone, family member, coworker, maybe a neighbor, will come to you at some point, maybe you're talking about something completely different, and the topic changes, and they'll ask you about something in your Christian way of life. Why do you do that? And perhaps then it morphs even further, and they'll explain why they're curious. Something's not working in their life. Those are always interesting conversations to have. Mr. Kaczynski talked about that a few weeks ago in the sermonette. A fellow on the beach at the feast, not part of church, and he was genuinely interested because he saw things that weren't working in the world, perhaps even in his life. God calls us to see those things. If our behavior amongst ourselves is not working, what do we do with it? I can tell you from my experience, more often than not, we try to ignore it, pretend it's not there. We mask it with something else, we avoid the person, or worse, rather than deal with it. God says, deal with it. Go to your brother. Go figure out what's not working so that it can. Go figure out why there's contention or disagreement or whatever it happens to be. Cast that off. Now, that's just one example. We can look at that in all kinds of things in our lives, that God calls us out of this world. If you back up to verse 9, he talks about the commandments. Those are instructions for life, John 10:10, so that we can have that abundant life. How many here have ever visited a prison? Show of hands? Yeah, more than I thought. If you've never been to a prison and you have an opportunity, I would encourage you to do it just to see what it's like. It's an oppressive place, even though for the most part they're brightly lit and clean. You have no control over your life in that environment, and they're not designed for justice. They're designed to warehouse people, for the most part. Those that are in prison, can, if they're honest with you, and sometimes they are, they will tell you why they're there and what they would do differently to not be there. And that's always a sad thing. Because as much as we might want to wish something away after the fact, we can't, can we? But what God does give us is the opportunity to move forward. Now, we don't have to be in prison to acknowledge those things. But we are in darkness, as Paul talked about, when we try to delude ourselves that there is no problem. That usually means there's a pretty big problem. And God wants us to deal with those things. In 1 Peter 2, verse 9, this is part of why. Why is this important to us, or should be? Why should God's viewpoint, if you will, of what is normal, why should that matter to us? 1 Peter 2, verse 9. You are a chosen generation. This should always humble us, in my opinion, when we stop to think about just that part of the verse. We'll read more of it here in a moment. There are roughly 6.5 billion people on the planet. How many understand what you and I understand about God's plan of salvation? It's a fraction of a fraction of a fraction. In the scheme of everyone on the planet, it's overwhelming. You probably have better odds winning the Powerball. And yet God, for whatever reason, looked at you, looked at me, looked at everyone else that he's called at this point and says, I've chosen you. I want you to see this. I want you to know this. He goes on to say, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. What makes something holy? This is my disagreement in our former association, most of us. We can make our own time holy. Do you remember that statement? That was it for me. I knew then that that was not where I needed to be. I cannot make anything holy. I can set things aside. I cannot make them holy. The only thing that makes anything holy is God's presence in it. The Sabbath is holy because God is in it. The holy days are holy because God has consecrated them. You and I become a holy nation because God lives in us. That means our normal is different. Our outlook has to be different. It's not the world's outlook. His own special people, that you may proclaim the praise of him who called you out of darkness. We're back to that again, Romans 12. Out of that darkness into his marvelous light. Now, how we proclaim that can take any number of avenues. And most of us are not going to stand on the soapbox in the street corner and shout it out, are we? We can support it in other ways, but the biggest way we do it is by how we live. I'll guarantee you people pay attention. Because if you say this is wrong, they're going to watch to see if you do it. We're chosen. We're chosen to look at things as God looks at things, to understand not only that they're different, but why. Ephesians chapter 4 is where I'd like to go next. This wrong outlook of what normal is creates problems, as we've touched on. Let's read what Paul said to the Ephesians in this matter. Ephesians 4 and in verse 18. Actually, let's pick it up in 17 is a better place to start. This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk in the futility of their mind. Now, to go back to the reference, it made perfect sense to Igor to just take any other brain. Because after all, it was just a brain. For those of you who don't know, in the movie, Hans Dubrick's brain was supposed to be one of the best, the most intelligent. Instead, he got the abnormal brain. God says we're to look at these things differently. Paul here is writing that we're no longer to walk as the world walks. Verse 18, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them. That's not a condemnation. That's simply a statement of where they are. And the funny thing about being ignorant is that when you are, you don't know you are, do you? I didn't know. And now we do. That's where all of us were when God called us. We didn't know. I didn't know the Sabbath was the seventh day. Didn't know I should still keep. I didn't know I shouldn't eat those foods. I didn't know the holy days are still valid and mean something, point us to God's plan. I didn't know about tithing. And yet, how much change do those things set in motion in our lives? Not only change, what kind of blessings do they bring? He goes on to recount some of the things that come from having this wrong outlook. In verse 19, being past feeling. That's an interesting thing to consider in a modern context. When you look at the senseless crimes that are committed on a regular basis. That in most cases you can only justify if someone has no feeling or compassion for anybody else. But yet we've become very desensitized as a culture, haven't we? He talks about other aspects of lewdness and uncleanness and greediness. He says, but you have not so learned in Christ. That is, the world's definition of normal is not God's definition of normal. It's not the way we are to live. We're also then, verse 24, to put on a new man, created according to God in true righteousness. And then he goes on to talk about other things that we're not supposed to engage in. This is the Christian walk, isn't it? And oftentimes it gets criticized that it's a life, if you will, of don'ts. Do not do this. Do not do that. Do not, you know, they say, well, it's so oppressive and so restrictive. And yet let's look at one simple application. If we never, ever have affairs, we never have to worry about bringing home an STD, do we? Never have to worry about that. Never have to worry about dying young because we've picked up something there is no cure for. We never have to worry about quality of life being suffered, or never ever having being able to have kids because we've been infected with something that's damaged those organs. Not to put too hard a point on it, but that's just one area, isn't it? The blessings that God shows us when we live according to His normal. I remember, and I may have mentioned this already here, but Mr. Buckmaster some months back, probably going back a year, I heard him give a sermon, sermonette. He had been to a class reunion. Now, he was joking, but he was not, when he said it was amazing how many old people were there. What he meant was, he wasn't saying, I'm not old. He acknowledged that. You know, you have this picture of you at 18 or whatever it happens to be when you were at your peak. That's not what he was talking about. What he was talking about was how old they really looked. That is, they looked older than their years. And yet when he began to ask them, you know, just casually about their lives, you know that they drank too much. They smoked. They ate the wrong foods, you could see from their physiques. Those things have an impact as well, don't they? In New England especially, one thing that I took consistent ribbing over was the fact that I didn't eat most seafood up there. That's normal to them. In fact, if you've got a boat, you can go out on Narragansett Bay and you can go quahogging on your own. You don't need a permit. Just get down in the water and you pull up all these mussels. It's mussels. The little clams. And you take your knife and you cut it open and they take it right out of the shell. Right out of the bay. And yet, how polluted is that water? And they eat that. That's normal to them. God says we're not supposed to engage in this, not because He's a God that says no, 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 no all the time, but because He knows, as in John 10:10 tells us, what works. No, don't do that. You'll hurt yourself. The stove is hot. Don't touch it. You'll burn yourself. Whatever it happens to be. This becomes more important as we consider the end time. In 2 Timothy 3, Paul wrote this in his day, and we can often say, well, this is what's coming. But Paul was not just writing for the end time. He was writing to Timothy in terms of what he would have to deal with in his time. He says in verse 1, 2 Timothy 3, know this, that in the last days perilous times will come. The standard of normal is going to shift. Now, that was saying a lot from the Roman perspective. But I'm convinced, again, we're pretty much there as well. As a country, men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control. Brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. And even if they still look good, he says, having a form of godliness, but denying its power. They may pretend they're not, but pretending's not enough. You and I can't pretend. We don't have that luxury. God holds us accountable because He's opened our minds to these things. Are we going to stick to the old normal, pretend it works, or are we going to say, no, I need to change? That's not a one-time event. It doesn't just happen at Passover and then we're set the rest of our lives. We might think about it and consider it a renewal every year at Passover. That's not what God's talking about. This really needs to be a daily application, like everything else in the way of life that God lays out for us. In Matthew chapter 4, verse 4, so I begin to wrap this up here. Matthew 4. It's one of those great memory verses. As Christ states this, he is quoting this from Deuteronomy 8. This is when Satan was tempting him. Maybe we can relate to this today, even in a small way. He fasted, and I love the understatements in the Bible. I always get a kick out of these. Verse 2. He had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, and afterwards he was hungry. You think? I don't even think I would be able to move after 40 days and 40 nights. I'd probably be room temperature. It can be hard enough just doing it for a day at times, can't it? And Satan then tempts him in verse 3, if you're the Son of God, command these stones to become bread. And notice, I mean, if you're 40 days into a fast, that's going to sound pretty appealing, isn't it? He said, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. It's a package deal. We don't get to pick and choose what normal is. Normal is the Sabbath, but not the holy days. Normal is tithing, but not the food laws. There are an awful lot of people who do that. There are an awful lot of people that can pretend to do it and not do it at all. God knows, though, doesn't he? And it will pay out. The question then is, normal by whose standards? That's really the question, isn't it? If we seek to define normal, we have to ask the question, by whose standards? When is it good to follow standards? When is it not good to follow standards? Abnormal versus different? The answer to these questions is in the discernment God tells us to have, isn't it? How we apply those things on a daily basis. When we make mistakes, how do we adjust? When we repent before God, what do we do to make it not happen again with his help? The bottom line is, it does depend upon how our answer relates to God's instruction. What does God have to say about it? The Bible is really our instruction manual. It really is. That can sound trite, but it really does give us the knowledge to have that abundant life. How to relate to one another. How to have a good physical life. How to deal with conflict. How to worship him. How to have a viewpoint beyond this limited physical life. God has given us the acceptable standard of how to live in his word, the Bible. We all have access to that. We don't have to worry about what is acceptable to the world around us. We don't have to be concerned with changing standards of morality and what's acceptable or not. We have the instruction we need. We have access to know. And if we don't know, to find out. Let's continue then to seek the abundant and normal life God has in store for us by living up to those standards.